Good morning. This meeting is now in session. My name is Angela Ryder, and I am the chair of the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy. It is Monday, October 23rd, 2023 at 11 a.m., and I'm calling this meeting to order. Folks, on this video conference, please mute yourselves until it is your opportunity to speak or you have been called upon to eliminate distractions and background noise. Please note that all individuals who are disruptive or speak without approval from the board chair will be warned to behave in a professional manner, and if the disruption continues, the individual will be removed from the meeting and not permitted to re-enter the meeting. The chair of the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy reserves the right to change the order of items published on this agenda, except for public hearings set for a specific time. During the board meeting and upon a majority of the quorum, the board may go into executive session to obtain legal advice from the board's attorneys pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A3 on any items listed on the agenda. All meeting attendees whose presence is not required in an executive session may remain in the boardroom meeting room when the board withdraws to chambers for an executive session. Any and all legal action by the board members will only take place in open session. Executive Director Ogerton, will you please call roll?
Yes, Madam Chair. Vice Chair DeRoos?
Present.
Board Member Tapscott?
Present.
Chair Ryder, you have three in attendance and two vacancies.
Thank you very much. Pursuant to ARS 38-431.01H, the board may make an open call to the public during a public meeting subject to a reasonable time. The cutoff time is 2 minutes and will be timed by the board staff. We will place and manner restrictions to allow individuals to address the public body on any issue that is within the jurisdiction of the public body. However, members of the board are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. The board, however, may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that the matter be put on a future agenda. Be advised that a call to public is not an opportunity for testimony for cases that are being reviewed by the board, and again, must be within the jurisdiction of the body. So please be sure that you do understand what the board can and cannot do by reviewing the Arizona rules and statutes from the board website. Do we have a call to public? Please raise your hand. Michelle Cordero, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hello, Michelle Cordero, Director of Education at AFAS Massage Education. I'm requesting that the board help to facilitate a movement. I'm requesting that the board help to facilitate a movement to reach the decision makers to allow that more staff be hired to process license applications. I know I have voiced concerns about processing times and procedures in the past, but just last week I was notified that another graduate was told that she was missing her FD-258 card, which is impossible since I sent it with all of her other documents. Another student is upset that one of her classmates who graduated after her has received her license while she is waiting for almost 5 months for hers. I'm waiting also for a reply to an email from over 2 weeks ago despite having a school liaison. And now our employer partners are not able to put our graduates to work because many start the hiring and training process once a graduate shows pending on the website, and that is no longer happening with the change to using the NA status on the website. People want to work, and they have been offered positions but can't start. I have been a part of conversations with dozens of therapists and therapists in waiting who want to do something. Letters to the governor, our representatives, the media, the ombudsman, the associations are all not helping to get some progress. Please help us all who are willing to do what it takes to help you acquire more staff. This sentiment was also recently voiced at the Industry Issues Advisory Panel meeting on September 27th. We all want to get the board the support it needs. Our individual efforts are not making strides, and we need to collaborate to get something to happen. Many have even offered to volunteer in the office if that is a possibility. Let's figure out what our group effort can be to get some movement for more staff. I know many people have said that massage therapy is just so low on the list of government priorities that no one cares. I refuse to believe this. I think we haven't been loud enough or had enough of a united front to be heard. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Michelle. Do we have anyone else for a call to public? That concludes this item on the agenda. Next on the agenda, declaration of, it's item number four, declaration of board member conflicts and conflicts of interest. Board members, you should have had an opportunity to review the board packet sent out by staff. Are there any conflicts of interest regarding the cases or investigative reviews that we are conducting today? And I see no's from both. I also do not have any conflicts. Item number five on the agenda, we have received the open meeting minutes to review from our meetings on June 26, 2023, July 10, 2023, and September 25, 2023. Are there any questions or discussion to be had regarding these open meeting minutes? And there are none. I move to accept these open meeting minutes from June 26, 2023, July 10, 2023, September 25th, 2023. Do I have a second?
This is Board Member Tapscott. You have a second.
Thank you. And board members, we shall do a voice vote to approve these minutes. Please unmute, beginning with Vice Chair DeRoos. State your name and voice your approval or opposition.
This is Vice Chair DeRoos, and I approve the minutes.
This is Board Member Tapscott, and I approve the approval of those three separate minutes.
And this is Chair. I also approve. The motion passes. Be advised that audio recordings are available online at the State Board website by individual meeting date. You do have to visit the website in order to hear those or see them. Item number six on the agenda, Executive Director, would you mind introducing the presenter? And then board staff, if you could please have the PowerPoint presentation available.
Madam Chair, are you referring to 6B as in boy?
I am referring to 6A.
Well, I'd have to introduce you because we're going to put up a screen presentation of yourself when you served as the delegate from Arizona at the annual meeting in San Diego.
That is correct.
Okay. I'm sorry. I wasn't sure. We didn't rehearse this in rehearsal. On item number A, we might want to tell the board that we're going to have a new item on the agendas going forward, which gives the opportunity for the chair to address the board with items that have come up since the last meeting in your volunteer service. And then today, with this being the first time we've done this, since you just recently attended the national meeting with the Federation over in San Diego, staff in a moment will put up the screen sharing, which are the notes from your meeting.
Thank you very much. So very brief PowerPoint, and I am going to talk fast because I know that we adjusted the time for today. We've got a lot of information to cover, and I need to be done by 12:55. I had attended the FSMTB conference this year after our last board meeting, actually right after the last board meeting, which was September 28th through the 30th in San Diego. And although the meeting minutes are not available yet from the conference, I wanted to take some time to report on the conference and some of the details of the conference. The first report that I want to give is one that has been discussed briefly at our last meeting with Mylon Petrine from the FSMTB, who was a guest presenter. And she had mentioned that she was seeking board support on Resolution 2023-1 proposed by Washington State Board of Massage Therapy. The proposal was to update bylaws pertaining to the requirements of one being eligible to take the MBLEX exam. The resolution did pass with a majority vote of the quorum, despite the Arizona board not taking a position, as discussed at our last meeting. So what this means is that anyone who wishes to take the NBLEX exam must not only be enrolled into an approved massage therapy program, but they also need to successfully complete and graduate from the massage therapy program. I know many of us thought that that was already happening, but the case was is that a lot of people were able to take the exam with a certain amount of hours set for the test, so on and so forth. So this actually changes the language that they have to graduate from the massage therapy program and complete it successfully. In states that do not require NBLEX, eligibility for the examination will be determined by FSMTB, and we will continue to update on this resolution as to when it becomes effective. Despite all the troubles that our board has surrounding staffing, funding, and navigating legal solutions around illicit businesses posing as under the guise of massage therapy, it was somewhat refreshing, but also disheartening to know that our board is not alone in these challenges. I had many discussions with other board delegates who have had still have similar circumstances, some worse and some better. Yet the one thing that we all have in common is our drive and passion to first and foremost protect the public and also elevate the industry's perception to the public. We agree that not only is the general population unaware and uneducated about the plagues that infiltrate our industry, many of our own constituents are also unaware of the severity of human trafficking that has become rampant and ever-growing, as well as the jurisdictions of state boards. It was discussed that most constituents prefer not to get involved to facilitate productive change in the perception of our industry, but would rather point the finger elsewhere and complain about what isn't being done to their satisfaction. Those constituents who do get involved do it voluntarily in their spare time and quickly discover that it is a thankless job, many times hitting a lot of roadblocks on the way. But as with anything that is worth fighting for, participation is necessary. From where I sit, I see that a lot of our own constituents have never attended a board meeting or even visit the board website. These folks are still surprised when they learn something has changed in the industry, such as new legislation or discontinued continuing education waivers, or that continuing education is even required at all. Believe it or not, it happens. The point is that our state is not alone, and to this I want to ask on the topic, a rhetorical question, how do we get people to be more involved and get involved with what's truly going on in their industry that they say that they want to be in? These are the same people that came into the industry and said, I really want to help people. So we want people's voices to be heard. We want people to speak up and have their voices go in the right direction. Next in our my presentation here, we had a lot of presentations at the conference, which I'll touch on a few of them briefly. Each presentation was very impressive and beyond informative, and I encourage anybody to try to attend one of these annual conferences if they're able to. One of the first presentations was from a group called The Network. Chris Muller Cabanera, who is the Chief Strategy Officer. The Network has actual data on human trafficking, and while I can't give away how they obtain this data is very sophisticated. It is the most comprehensive and sophisticated that I've ever seen, and quite accurate. It is suspected that there are approximately 13,000 illicit businesses under the guise of massage therapy alone, with an expected 38% growth each year for an annual income of $5 billion a year. And I'm pausing there so you can just absorb that a little bit. At least 11,202 illicit businesses have opened and been reviewed in the last year. These statistics are only for the USA. some data on the numbers of how many illicit businesses there are come from sex buyer websites such as RubMaps. A lot of LMTs have heard of RubMaps, but let it be known, too, that there are probably at least 15 others that were mentioned during this presentation. While many folks think that this kind of income makes its way back into the local economy, it doesn't. All of the money is filtered underground and lines the pockets of the bad actors. And oftentimes, some of these bad actors are not even in the U.S. Just as an example, one of the programs the network offers is a landlord engagement program. With this program, profit, what they've indicated is profit in, landlord's profit imposing under the guise of massage therapy is dependent on the storefront. So if we eliminate these storefronts being available, then the illicit businesses have nowhere to go. It provides traffickers and sex buyers a physical space to conduct business and veil the legitimacy to do it. In other words, it's just massage. So if we want to stop the money and end exploitation, we have to deny the traffickers this space. The network collaborates with local and state authorities to launch landlord engagement programs, or LEPs, a high-impact, low-cost initiative designed to hold commercial landlords accountable for what is happening on their property. The network also provides data on illicit locations, landlords, and sex buyer reviews. They provide case study analysis and sample landlord letter templates, training on program design and implementation, ongoing support for resulting illicit business investigations, civil action, or alternative regulatory enforcement. It was stressed at this meeting as well from a couple of different presenters that the regular stings that happen to get some of these places closed are often fruitless because it's just one small piece of the puzzle. Utilization of the landlord program has been shown to have a minimum effect of a 45% closure rate of illicit businesses where it has been implemented and as high as 100%. And the 100% comes from where the illicit businesses have to move to another area that does not have this engagement in place. It's as simple as that. We also had a presentation from Brian Fries, who is the Director of Information Security and Security Services of Pearson View. Brian is responsible for the execution of investigations related to the various types of fraud exam programs faced, as well as overseeing programs related to predictably identifying threats to exam programs. The lengths that the bad actors go through to attempting to take these exams, such as MLIS, are incredibly sophisticated. I can't go into the details because I don't want to give anybody any ideas, but these practices are not limited to just the use of special glasses or screensavers to even attempting to change test takers during the exam. And I think we can, oh, yes, we're on the correct slide. Thank you, Tony. We also had a presentation from Imran Ali, Senior Director of Training, Consulting, and Investigation Services with Eckberg Lammers, and Amy Schroeder, Training and Education Coordinator and Investigation Specialist with Eckberg Lammers. And they both provided a detailed presentation on actual cases that they've worked. Their presentation hit heavily on labor trafficking and debt bondage. Specifically, the victim owes a debt from a promise to perform personal services, and the value of the services does not apply to the debt, nor is there a length of terms of the debt that is defined. They spoke of changing perceptions and changing vocabulary through education, which, as some of you know, that particular piece resonates with me personally. I will say that the material was very graphic in nature, and some of the delegates had to leave the conference room due to the severity of what was being shown. It was very disturbing. as they shared actual voice recordings of trafficking abuse, as well as photographs of abused by survivors, of course, with their permission. Together, Imran and Amy lead what is called the Human Trafficking Training Center, also known as HTTC, and they are based out of Minnesota. They will also be hosting the North American Human Trafficking Conference via the Law Enforcement Training Academy and Consulting by Expert Lammers, which is taking place this weekend, October 25th through 27th in Las Vegas, if you want to go. Finally, we also got to hear from Dale Atkinson of Atkinson and Atkinson LLC. He is the legal counsel for FSMTP and also provided a presentation explaining the importance of state regulation and his role in regulatory law. Mr. Atkinson is a frequent speaker for all phases of development and administration of licensure examination programs, license transfer programs, and license credential verifications and storage to regulatory groups, agencies, and stakeholders. His presentation included a discussion on regulatory cases and trends, not just limited to massage therapy, but also very interesting. While a lot of people might find some of that information quite more like a snooze fest, I was wanting to grab some popcorn during the presentation. Found it very fascinating. These were not all of the presentations that happened at the conference, but I wanted to name a few. I will say that, I want to thank publicly FSMTP for holding that conference and allowing me to attend. It was very, very informative. On a lighter note, I did come back 2 pounds heavier because they fed us very well. And that concludes my report from the annual FSMTP conference. Next on our agenda, item B, do we have Mara Concordia available?
Madam Chair, I think you have a question first.
Oh, yes, Michael Tapscott, please, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Ryder. It was just a great, you delivered so much information there that I wanted to comment briefly. And thank you, by the way. Obviously, you consolidated a huge amount of information and probably the most important stuff for us to know. I really appreciated hearing there are other players that need to tackle the trafficking issue besides just the massage therapy boards. I'm not saying we're not an important factor, but it's nice to hear about that. Did they address also shell companies and the fact that you can open up an anonymous business means the rest of us, by the way, have to go through 2 background checks, all this stuff, but I can open up a company and not tell you who I am, which means only my employees get arrested, not me. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. I think I also want to kind of put that on record. But thank you very much.
Thank you, Board Member Tapscott. And actually, before we go on, and I do apologize, there is, since Michael has mentioned that, is there a way we can put the presentation back up just for a moment? I want to talk about slide number 4 on here, just so that people who have video can see what is happening. And those who are just on audio, I can talk a little bit about it, if that's possible. I know I said I was going to talk so fast, and I talked myself right off of the screen.
Madam Chair, you might ask Tony directly if he's able to bring the screen share back up.
Oh, yes. Tony, are you able to bring the screen share back up for the PowerPoint presentation, slide number 4? I apologize. So it is the one that looks like a virus. because that's exactly what it looks like. If you could please scroll, Tony, to slide number 4, if possible. Perfect. Okay, so like a lot of massage therapists taking their continuing education classes, I didn't have time to write all of the things down that I wanted to write, so I'm with my phone taking screenshots. So this is a very blurred out version of what was presented by the network. So if you see the little icon person in blue, this is an actual case that is currently being investigated, and that one individual has at least 10 massage state massage licenses across the country that are active. They're active. The individual has been sanctioned by Florida, Georgia, and Missouri, and involved in illicit businesses. The individual has ties to multiple shell companies, which is what Michael reminded me of, the shell companies, the most shell company established in September of 2022. And so that's what I wanted to point out. You know, from afar, it does look like a virus, and it is. And so just getting one of these places closed down, they just pop back up. So it's really about, you know, trying to find where that the main person's coming from. So a lot of times when people get frustrated, like, these places are staying open, we can't get them shut down. One of the reasons why is because they're so connected to all these others. And a lot of times the people that are working in these places are moved about every 14 days. And a lot of the people who are working there are working under one person's license and claiming to be that individual. So we might have somebody who has a state license, and then everybody says that they are that person, which ends up being an issue. We used to have the photographs on our licenses to be able to identify somebody, make sure that they were who they say they were, and we no longer have that ability. So there's a constant, I always call it death to the board by a thousand paper cuts. You just keep taking away until it can barely function. I won't, go into great detail. I don't want to get in trouble by anybody, but that's how I feel about it. So, Tony, thank you for bringing that back up. Are there any other questions from the board members or board staff regarding the annual conference or anything that I presented today?
This is Board Member Tapscott. I just want to say I'm glad you spoke your mind.
Thank you.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Thank you.
I will echo. I don't have any questions, but it was a wonderful presentation. It looks like a lot of really great information, and thank you for bringing it back and sharing it with us. A lot of important information. Good reminders, too.
Thank you very much. Now we can move on to B, which is a summary report of the Massage Therapy Board Industry Issues Advisory Task Force, if Mara Concordia is available.
Madam Chair, Mara was not able to join the meeting because of the time change,
okay,
but asked me to make a brief statement on her behalf. If you go to the board website, the actual contents of the meeting is available both in video and audio. We do not have minutes up yet, but you can observe the program on recording if you are not able to make it. And that was the first meeting, and the second meeting has been scheduled for November the 30th. I know we have some members of the advisory group on the telephone or on the computer here, and the chair has sent emails out to many of them proposing partnering among some of the volunteers, which will be reviewed at the meeting on the 30th.
Thank you. And for those who aren't aware of of this particular task force, it was something that had been brought years ago to the board, and the task force is really to help advise the board, come up, kind of a think tank, so to speak. It's been mentioned a lot in Calls Public previously. How can we navigate some of these things that the board is having such trouble with? And sometimes we do need more cooks in the kitchen, more ideas to navigate the law, what we can do within the law, and hopefully function better as a board. So if you have an opportunity to review that particular MP3 or video, I highly recommend it. It'll give you a better idea of what this task force is about. And like Dr. Overton said, we plan on meeting again November 30th. Board member Tapska, you are next. Do you have a summary report of HB 2012, Chapter Law 101, Laws of 2023?
I do. Thank you, Chair Ryder. I'll be really brief. I'm not going to go into gory details. I feel like a lot of people come here for information about what's changing. For better or worse, what's changing is HB 2012 goes into effect in 1 week on October 30th. And at that time, new massage therapists applying for a new license, if English is not their native language, they no longer have to take an English proficiency test. So HB 2012 goes into effect in 1 week and repeals the English language test requirement. That's it.
Board Member Tapscott, do you happen to know if anybody who has graduated before that date would then be required to take the English proficiency exam if they have not already?
Yeah. It's a really good question because I've reached out to people. I don't know. By the way, the real short answer is I don't know, but my understanding is it applies to whenever they apply.
I see.
And so if they apply now, if they graduated now and were to wait a week to apply, the application, the law no longer exists at that point. Because it's not about education, it's about the requirement for licensure. And so they're not asking for licensure until the 30th, then it should be okay. But again, I'm one of the few people here who's not a lawyer.
so maybe Jean Galvin might have any updates or answers, perhaps, from the Assistant Attorney General's office.
This is Casey.
Or Casey.
Not to speak out of turn or over Jean, I don't have an answer off the top of my head, but that's certainly something the board can ask the AG's office to learn to follow up on and get something more concrete.
I would love to ask the Assistant Attorney General's office to investigate that a little bit more. I just am being proactive and seeing that question is going to come up.
Yeah, yes, respectfully, you're going to see applications on the 30th, right? I mean, I know they're coming from my school, just to be very transparent. Yeah, so it's a great question to ask now.
Thank you for that. Item number 7 on the agenda. Items for board review, discussion, and possible action. Upon a vote of the majority of the quorum, the board may go into executive session pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2 to discuss or consider records exempt by law from public inspection, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is specifically required to be maintained as confidential by a state or federal law. The board requires participants in these cases to have their video on with their full name on the screen unless they have been advised ahead of time by the board's investigator to leave their camera off and only use their initials for anonymity. We do have a formal interview that has been on the agenda. Case 23-018, Lisa Bao, licensed massage therapist 27615. This, again, is a continuance of the case previously. The board had motioned to have this case moved to a formal hearing along with the issuance of a consent agreement for voluntary surrender of the license. Investigator David Elson, could you please provide another update on this? We're still waiting to schedule a formal hearing with Ms. Bao. Is that correct?
That's correct. She was, we're waiting for her criminal case to be completed, and she's scheduled for November in Mesa Municipal Court.
Do you know the date in November?
I don't. It's fluid. It was supposed to be, it's changing. It was supposed to be on the, her original court date was supposed to be for the last time we had a board meeting. That's why we didn't hear it then. So now they've changed it again. They're liable to change it again and again. We don't know.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, I just looked it up. I think at least tentatively, like Mr. Elson said, subject to change, but for now, the trial date is set for November 20th.
Okay. All right. Well, we will just keep putting this on the agenda until we get Ms. Bao here for the formal hearing. That concludes this investigative review. Our next investigative review is case number 23-044, Jai Feng Wang, massage therapist, 26684. This is also a continuance of this case. I believe the respondent, as well as her attorney, might be out of the country. Is that correct, investigator?
Yes, Madam Chair, they provided us with plane tickets showing that the attorney was going to be out of the country, and the respondent has no access to Google while she's in China.
Okay. So we moved this case at a previous meeting to formal hearing and offered a little bit of grace with them being out of town. This formal hearing will now take place at the November board meeting, regardless if the respondent regardless if the respondent or the attorney are able to come. But have they been properly notified of the next board meeting in November and their importance of appearing?
Not yet.
Okay. I personally don't want to see this case prolonged any further, so I do want to move forward with it, and even in the event that they are unable to attend. These meetings are virtual, so that being said, it is much easier to attend and participate since we are not in person. That concludes this investigative review. At this time, we have no formal hearing scheduled. We have no other investigative reviews, but we do have some license applications requiring public board review. Our first one being Luana Webb, massage therapist 04294P, who has an expired license since 3/27/2023. This is a board review of the information available to the board at this time, and it is not a hearing. The board may consider a motion to issue a cease and desist order, and prior to the respondent renewing her license, sign a consent agreement for the amount of $500 in civil penalty, and if not signed and paid within the 60 days, her renewal may be denied. All parties, once again, please be advised that the board requires you to be on camera, unmuted, as well as your representing counsel. Is the applicant, or massage therapist, rather, present in this meeting today, Luana Webb? And I see Luana Joya Lucia. Okay. Could you please go ahead and unmute? We cannot hear you. Okay, still can't hear you. It does look like your microphone is muted, from what I can see on the screen. And it is looks like it's unmuted, but we're still unable to hear you. How about we do this, board members, if we're okay with this, we can maybe move to the next one that's on our agenda and give Ms. Luana an opportunity to maybe log out, log back in, maybe rectify the audio challenge that she's having right now. Okay, so you go ahead and do that, and we will come back to you. Our next case that we're looking at is Kimberly Downing, Massage Therapist, 18266. Again, this is a board review of the information available to the board at this time, and it is not a hearing. The board may consider a motion to sign a consent agreement for an $800 civil penalty, and if it is not signed within 60 days, a notice of charges will be issued. Is Kimberly Downing available at this meeting?
Madam Chair, I don't think she's going to attend.
Okay. Thank you for that, Investigator. Investigator Elson, could you give us the backstory and summary of this particular case?
Yes, ma'am. On October 2nd, board staff received a complaint from an Aetna Foreign Services benefit plan administrator that a member submitted receipts for massage therapy services performed by the respondent between 8/10/2023 and 9/7/2023 for reimbursement. The massage services were performed by the respondent, and according to the Arizona Massage Therapy online licensing record, respondent expired 1/29/23. On October 3rd, I spoke to the respondent telephonically. Respondent said that she did make a payment for her license renewal, but admits she failed to complete an application. Respondent admitted to working while her license was expired. Respondent admitted she practices an expired license between 1/29/2023 and 10/3/2023. And just for an update, the option says offer a consent agreement. We have a signed consent agreement on this one. She signed the consent agreement for $800 civil penalty, and she is actually active now. She got her license back active.
Very good. Very good. Are there any questions from the board members?
This is Board Member Tapsk. I'm just curious, do we have proof that she submitted payment?
Yes, she did submit the payment. Okay. She just didn't do anything else.
I'm not trying to put it out there that that is acceptable. I just want to know if it all kind of matched up. All right, great. That's all I have to ask.
Ms. DeRuth, Vice Chair DeRuth, do you have any questions?
No questions.
Okay. I move to accept the consent agreement that has been accepted and signed by the respondent, Kimberly Downing, that includes an $800 civil penalty. May I have a second?
This is Vice Chair DeRuth, and I'll second that.
And a roll call vote, please, Mr. Overton.
Yes, Madam Chair. Board Member Tapscott.
Aye.
Vice Chair DeRoost.
Aye.
Chair Ryder.
Aye.
Three ayes, two absent. Two vacant.
The motion passes. That concludes this review. Ms. Luana Webb, can we hear you yet? And I see your lips moving, and I do not hear you.
She could use the telephone line to call in.
Do you want to do that? Okay.
The telephone line is on the first page of the agenda. It says to join by phone and gives you a phone number and a PIN number, which is on our website.
we're getting a thumbs up, so hopefully she is able to get patched through to the meeting and we'll be able to hear her. One moment. Okay. I believe we're able to hear you.
We can hear him now.
You can hear me.
There's a lot of feedback.
All right. I have left the meeting with my physical self, and now I'm on with my voice.
All right. Thank you so much. So I'm going to start from the beginning, Luana, just to, for as a formality. So this is Massage Therapist 04294P, expired on March 27, 2023. This is a board review of the information available to the board at this time and not a hearing. The board may consider a motion to cease and desist. And prior to the respondent renewing her license, a consent agreement in the amount of $500 for civil penalty, and if not signed and paid within 60 days of the renewal. Ms. Webb, you are now present at this meeting.
I am fully present. Thank you so much.
And are you represented by counsel?
No, I am not.
Okay. Investigator David Elson, would you please provide a summary of this review for Luana Webb and for the public?
Yes, Madam Chair. On September 18, 2023, the board received a complaint that respondent was practicing massage therapy out of her home and that her license was expired. Based on this information, the board conducted an investigation. I called the respondent, inquired about receiving a massage. She indicated that I could and said that she was I in Sedona, at which point I identified myself as the board's investigator and she denied performing massage. Instead, she was aware her license was expired and she was provided sacred deepening services, not massage services.
Okay. Ms. Webb, do you wish to make a statement at this time?
Yes, I do. Let me know when I can begin, please.
You may go ahead and begin.
All right. So during COVID, I remember receiving correspondence from our massage board that something was happening to where they were relieving us of going in to receiving our CEUs, of course, because of the pandemic. And during that time, I thought in my mind, I remember seeing that something was different and that I didn't have to get my CEUs at the normal time. I assumed that it was 1 year later, which would have been March 27th, 2024. And so I just put the paper away and I carried on with my life. I will admit this, my dear board members. I did not look deep into that information. I was the pandemic was happening. I was not working much. Obviously, people were not coming in. And I had my head in the sand. And so when March 27th of this year came around, I thought that I was fat and happy, so to speak, that it was a year further in the future. And then I didn't think I was working without a license. I did not check. I did not know to check. And then when David Elson called, of course, you know, I can receive him as a client. I didn't think that I was expired. And then when he said that he was from the board, everything came in my mind. My God, my birthday has passed. Was it this year? Why is he calling me? And so I'm just very embarrassed that I made this huge oversight. I have been with you folks for nearly 20 years, and this hasn't happened before. And most of all, I have never been turned in for any reason before this has happened. And so I'm not only embarrassed, but especially after watching your preview for the past 30 minutes or so, I realize how imperative it is not only to stay on, you know, being more active in the board, but also knowing how vital and what a privilege it is to be a licensed massage practitioner. And so I just want to share that with you, that this call right now with me being a witness to how vital this board is, I want to actually start participating more like you have asked us to do.
Thank you very much, Ms. Webb. Do any of the board members have any questions that they would like to ask Ms. Webb at this time?
Yeah. Have you been practicing actual massage therapy with the expired license? Because there, I see something saying that you were not doing massage therapy, but you were you or were you not?
All right. So here I'm going to ask for your divine witnessing on me. For the past 35 years, ever since, you know, I was in the 20s, my mid-20s, I have been in the healing arts. Celebrating my ancestry heritage, doing the drumming, doing the prayer calls, being a minister. And so during all of that time that I have been practicing, especially since I got my massage, I went to SWIHA, Southwest Institute of Healing Arts, many, many years ago. I had been practicing and I developed a very, very unique modality. And so I know you're asking me a direct question and I'm going to answer it. I don't consider it a massage quote unquote because it's not the typical session that you would receive in a spa. It's not the sweetest, you know, that we would normally receive. It's so much more. After 35 years, I'm hoping it's going to be more. And so to answer your question, the umbrella is massage. There's no question about that. However, my technique is very different, and especially after this past month or so that David Elston had phoned me, I am going to be creating a coin, if you will, on what it is that I do. You know, like they do with healing touch, quantum touch, you know, all of these other methods. And so to answer your question, ma'am, I did not know that I did not have a license. I was under the umbrella of massage. And I will say that when people do call me or did call me for a massage, quote unquote, I would explain to them explicitly what they were going to receive so that they would know that it was something special. And again, just to reiterate, I did not know that my license was expired. And I am embarrassed about that. I do realize that I was, I just didn't know. I thought it was moved up a year. And there would be no reason. Oh, I'm sorry. I just want to say one more thing. There would be no reason why I wouldn't go and get my CEU. I mean, nothing was preventing me outside of the fact that I had it in my mind that it was moved up a year because of the pandemic. There was nothing preventing me. I did not do this maliciously.
Thank you for the clarification. And are you currently practicing as of today?
I am not practicing massage. As a matter of fact, when David Elston called me on September 19th, after we hung up, I was so terrified. I went in to every, how would you call it, media, you know, like Yelp, Google, my website, and I changed it, and I put in Reiki, and I deleted, as far as I know, every word that has those seven little letters in it for massage. So I changed it to Reiki, and I do Soul Guide. I mean, I do a lot of other offerings other than massage.
Thank
you. And so to answer your question, yes, I changed it all, as far as I know, as far as what I could change.
Thank you for that clarification. I have one last question. Are you planning on renewing your massage license?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, right here, I have in my hands, I wish you could see, the Arizona Department of Public Safety. I have that all filled out. I'm sorry, I'm getting emotional. I have it filled out, and I'm ready to go down to the USPS station to get my fingerprinting done. And here in Sedona, you may imagine, with it being a small town, there's not much pickings when it comes to CEUs. So I may have to, not that it matters, but I may have to go down to Phoenix, to SWEHA, Southwest Institute of Healing Arts, to get my my CEUs. And I'm going to do half online and half in person. And I don't know if this is, shameless of me. Yet I asked for three CEUs from being on this call if I stay with this call until it ends.
Very smart.
Oh, thank you so much. I've been with you for so long. This industry is my heart and soul's fire.
Thank you, Ms. Webb. Vice Chair DeRoos, do you have any other questions that you would like to ask Ms. Webb at this time?
I think that's the last of my questions. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
If you look at what went out in the board packet, there appears to be, let me find out what page it's on for you. She was lapsed two other times. Just a second. I just have it for you. In the packet, I included that she was lapsed between 3/27/17 and 7/2/19, and 3/27/13 and 5/8/2015. Those were her previous lapse license.
I see that.
And she was already on 1/23/23. She was given 3 hours of CEs for attending a board meeting on 1/23/23.
Okay, so with that that being said, we can only do 3 hours per renewal.
Right.
I don't know if Tony was going to say that or not, because he's got his hand up, but I think I stole the words out of your mouth.
That is exactly what I was going to say. But it's only once every renewal period, so she's already got what she can. She'll have to get her hours somewhere else.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Nope, apology necessary for that. Board Member Tapscott, do you have any questions that you would like to ask Ms. Webb?
No, I would like to ask Investigator Elson, though, just there's a lot of dates there. So did Ms. Webb apply for online CEUs from attending a board meeting before you had contacted her?
Yes. She actually applied for online CEUs from the January 23rd meeting.
Okay. Thank you. I think that's an important point.
Okay. Board members, do you have anything else that you would like to say or ask at this time?
This is Board Member Tapscott. I don't have anything else I'd like to ask. I realize that there's no malicious intent here. I agree with Ms. Webb. However, there is a violation here. And I think that has to be addressed. We're not talking about not renewing a license, right? But I think a fine is still not out of the question. I think we have to put that on the professional, regardless of the circumstances, regardless of sincerity, all sorts of things. So that would be my only comment.
Thank you for that, and I do agree. Investigator David Elson, is there anything that you would like to add at this time?
No. I think I've given you all the information that that I've got.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for your input. Based on the information presented at this meeting and contained in the investigative report, I move to issue a cease and desist order and, prior to the respondent renewing her license, sign a consent agreement for a $500 civil penalty. If this is not signed and paid within 60 days, the renewal application will be denied. May I have a second?
This is Board Member Tapscott. I second that.
And can we do a roll call vote, Executive Director?
You're muted.
Thank you. Yes, Madam Chair. Vice Chair DeRoost?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
3 ayes, 2 vacant.
The motion passes. Ms. Webb, do be advised that this also means that you are not to practice massage therapy until your renewal application is approved and in good standing with the board. This concludes this license application review.
Thank you very much.
All right. Item number 8 on our agenda, board review of draft policies and procedures for response to responding to compliance following the 2022 Arizona Auditor General Sunset Performance Audit. Do we have Jessica Ross Esquire available with us today?
Madam Chair, I do believe she's on the call because I received a confirming text that she may be muted. Give her a chance to check that.
Sure thing.
I do not see her on the list of attendees for screen presence.
I saw her name pop up for phone, but she's not on there now, Tom.
Okay. If you look in your packet at the section with the proposed rules that the outside counsel has provided to us, you'll notice the language in red ink, which is corresponding to the Arizona Auditor General's report that showed specific missing policies and procedures that the board needed to adopt to become in compliance with the sunset and performance audit.
And it looks like Jessica has just joined.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe that was a different Jessica. Please go ahead, Jessica.
Okay. I was going to see if we could confirm if it's just her microphone being muted. Yeah, she is on the call. Jessica, your microphone is muted. And I was giving just some background while you're getting up to stage here. Well, anyway, you'll notice in your packet the draft language which Jessica came up with, and then the red ink is the specific coordination with the findings from the sunset performance audit, so you can cross-reference back and forth. And I'm hoping each of you had a chance to review these before this morning, but the attorney is here to respond to specific questions, and I was hoping she actually might do a quick run-through, not word by word, but category by category of what we've attempted to do here. About 2 or 3 months ago, you'll recall that we provided you a packet with about 43 proposed draft rules and procedures, and that has been put off to the side because these specific responses are of more direct importance to the sunset performance audit. If the board gets a chance to review these this morning and decides to approve, then these will be transmitted with a cover letter back to the audit team that did the sunset performance audit. And then on your agenda today, you'll also see a proposal that comes from Jessica that the director would have the authority to continue working on updating the policies and procedures manual and keeping the board apprised. And then what we would propose doing is coming back with some portion of the 43 that were already cobbled together by Jessica, either at the November or January meeting. And this would be an ongoing effort by the staff, most likely working with Jessica, to augment the policies and procedures beyond just what was identified by the Auditor General in the Sunset Performance Audit, but actually adding other board issues going forward. And I see Jessica is back again, but we're not getting connection. Jessica, your showing is muted, but you're showing in attendance at the meeting. And if you're using a laptop, you may have inadvertently pressed the button up on the top row. I think she's left and she's going to try coming back again. Anyway, that's what you have before you this morning in the draft policies. And
I have had an opportunity to look at them, and I do have to say that that was a lot of work put together in a short period of time from the audit. So kudos and thank you to Jessica for doing that.
I showed Jessica back in on the meeting.
Oh, yes.
With a screensaver from Star Trek, it looks like. I don't know.
I think it's a staircase.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay. But we still don't have an audio connection. You know, Jessica, the only thing else I can think of would be to do a telephone connection. I know you probably wanted to do a share the screen, but maybe we can do that at this end if you want to connect by telephone. Okay, she's hung up again. Tony, if you see a line coming through, that would then be her.
Board Member Tapscott.
Thank you. Just a quick question. I do not see in my materials the changes. Is that in our packet or is that a separate packet?
Madam Chair, Mr. Tapscott, in your board packet, and the very last exhibit is the black inked language of what the attorney has drafted, but it has the red ink language off to the side, which are the specific deficiencies identified by the Arizona Auditor General. So the language that's in black can be reviewed, discussed, amended, eliminated, anything the board wants to do today, because it's just a draft being submitted to you for the first time. Are you finding that packet?
It's page 43 of 48 in my packet.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Sorry, I didn't go down far enough.
And it doesn't run. I mean, it's lengthy, but it's not undue lengthy. It runs about 5 pages, 6 pages. And the red is the Auditor General, what the board is missing, that would be considered standard policies and procedures for a regulatory board. The black ink is the drafted language, which Jessica has assembled and the full staff reviewed about 2 weeks ago. And now we're waiting for her to connect again by telephone.
I will just make the comment that it was very organized and very easy for me to follow. As somebody who reads a policy, I was very impressed with how easy it was. The following showed which ones it addressed, so kudos to
that would be the attorney, not myself, so I want to make sure she gets the proper acknowledgement.
Very good.
I would like to also comment that some of this just really provides clarification so we're not bumping into policies, right? Some of this was not that the board was really technically doing something wrong. It's about interpretation of policy, and now it's clarified, and I appreciate that.
Right, and my understanding is that we did not have a policies and procedures at all. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, the board was established in 2003, and there has never been an organized effort to codify even traditional so-called policies and procedures. So the problem facing the Auditor General is when they came in to do their boilerplate analysis, as they would with other public entities, but particularly regulatory health boards, that there was no way to accurately measure performance, not only because of the database being written on an Etch-a-Sketch in 1970, but just the fact that there was no independent standards that the board had agreed to in writing for which they could measure compliance. So, we remain deficient until these policies and procedures are adopted by the board. and transmitted to the Auditor General, and then and they'll be back. If you enjoyed them a year ago, you'll enjoy them again in a year coming, because we have had the final report and we've had the 6-month update, and they will be returning in less than 18 months. So we should probably get some additional contact from the Auditor General's new audit team in about 12 months. And there is preparatory work that takes place before the audit actually happens. So it would be nice if, in fact, we could get these established policies to him prior to the start of the new audit. For those of you who don't remember, or for those listening who do not know, in the old days, public entities that were sunsetting and needed legislative intervention by the full state legislature to be continued would get 10 years, 8 years or so, sometimes 6 years. This board, and actually the dental board as well, was only renewed for 2 years. So, okay, we're showing Jessica Thomas back in the call. And,
I'm so sorry, guys. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
We can hear you.
Oh. I was trying so hard to get my audio to work. I'm so sorry.
That is the longest ad lib I've ever done, so.
I don't know about that.
All right, no Irish jokes here.
Okay.
Jessica, in the interest of time for everybody, they have the packet, which they've had a chance to prior to review, and they have the language before them, and we've done a comparative discussion on the black versus the red. But maybe you could provide just some quick background on what this task is about and offer your observations, and then maybe kind of run through why these are a priority.
Sure. So you guys recently had a sunset audit, I think it is what it was, and they had several items that they wanted the board to address. What I've done is I've gone through that audit mark by mark and basically created some policies and procedures that I think address those issues. So that's what we're going to go through today. And then if anyone has any comments on how they should change or whether they address the issues, that, of course, is up to the board.
Okay.
Can everyone see my screen?
Yes.
Wonderful. Okay, so the first we have is the board shall issue a final administrative decision on all complaints no later than 180 days after the date it receives the complaint. This addresses finding number one. Any questions, comments, or edits to that?
Jean Galvin.
Hi, Jessica. A final administrative decision, how are you defining that?
So those are actually, so final administrative decision is actually not defined in rule or policy. It's actually defined in statute through the APA.
And so that would include any formal hearing and a request to for rehearing or review. I'm just wondering if 180 days is sufficient. If you figure out the time the complaint comes in, we request a response, any interviews that may have to take place, the notice to a party of at least 30 days before the hearing,
mm-hmm.
And then a request for rehearing or review, and then the final decision that is issued. I'm just wondering if the board members think that 180 days is enough time to do all of that.
And I completely agree. I think that that is a very good question for the board. My understanding is that they do issue final administrative decisions within 180 days. But again, I am not part of the staff or the board, so we will leave it up to them to decide whether or not that is accurate and, quite frankly, doable.
I would like to comment on that. I think that historically with this current board and even the and maybe most cases with the previous board, that the complaints have been have had a decision by the board no later than 180 days, and that 180 days is typical of most boards, and that is what the sunset audit team is, I don't want to say demanding, but demanding that we do. David Elson?
That number came in from the sunset audit team. They want all cases completed from 180 days from the time of intake till completion. They're looking, they're docking you for anything over 180 days.
Well, and I think that having that 180 days, it's such a standard of, how quickly we should be getting these cases done. There's obviously going to be times where, if we have a case that has other hearings that are outside of the administrative hearings and we're not able to get to them, then so be it. But I think it sets a standard as to how quickly we should be getting these done, particularly when we have complainants that are waiting for resolution. So I think 180 days is fair.
Thank you.
Okay, any other comments or questions, edits?
So this is Board Member Tapscott. I just have a quick question. I agree with the 180-day, and I really like that we're setting a standard. However, there are times we won't be able to hit that standard. And so because somebody will have a court case that we're waiting on before we ever even bring them in, and that court case could go for 180 days, right? And so legally, what does it mean when we put this in writing and we don't hit this standard? Or is this just this is our policy and procedure that we attempt to achieve? Like, what does it mean when we don't achieve this?
Jessica Thomas.
Jean, I'm losing my voice. It's that time of year where allergies hit. Jean, I'll leave the legal questions up to you. Obviously, I cannot provide legal advice to the board, but I can say that from a rulemaking standpoint, policies and procedures are not enforceable on the public. Beyond that, I will leave it up to Jean. I know that 180 days, when we're looking at a final administrative decision is, I think, as you've mentioned, within your grasp, but to the extent that you cannot meet that deadline for extenuating circumstances, I think that, again, extenuating circumstances, that's, not the norm.
Mm-hmm. Director Osmerkin?
Madam Chair and Michael and Jean, this was not a request of the board. It was a direction for the board. And I did testify on this specific issue, expressing concern about the practicality of many cases of respondents getting outside counsel late in the investigative process and so forth. My colleague, Ryan Edmondson, testified before the JLAC committee as well, and there was not a lot of interest in the discussion being continued. It was a direction by the auditors, and I think they understand there's not going to be full compliance, particularly where you have cases that result in continued, as everybody here knows in this call, we get continued postponements all the time that are not necessarily based on resources or access to counsel, but based on lay people's understanding of what they need to respond to until they secure counsel. But we did make the attempt to talk about real life with the members of the JLAC committee, and it was not a brilliant success by myself or my colleague. So.
I think I would hope that there would be some grace offered in cases that are taking more than 180 days with an explanation as to why they might be taking longer, and not scold the board too much for surpassing the 180 days when there's a really good reason that it has. But like you said, it's just a starting point.
Madam Chairman, board members, it would be helpful if you would concur with the direction of the Auditor General, and then if we have a compliance problem, we might be able to talk about resources, my favorite topic. So. But if you want to make a longer period, I would suggest you better have justifications or exceptions and so forth.
Agreed.
I think the 180 days as a standard is good. If it's over, I think I agree. I think we're all saying the same thing. There's extenuating circumstances, and auditors, you know, like to have findings, so we'll give them a couple. Hopefully not, but.
Right. Okay. Moving on.
Okay, so if there is nothing else on number one, we will move on to number two, which is the board shall retain all written complaints, correspondence related to written complaints, and any other investigative documents and board decisions, including notice of dates of investigative steps and investigative results for 10 years after a final administrative decision is rendered on a specific complaint. Again, this is addressing finding one, number 2A.
I don't have any questions about that one. Other board members?
No questions. I think that sounds reasonable.
Board member Tapscott, I agree.
All right. Moving on.
All right. We'll move on to number three. Within 10 business days of receiving a written complaint, staff will review the complaint and assign an investigator. Within 10 business days after an investigator has been assigned to a complaint, the investigator shall contact all parties listed in the complaint to notify the involved parties of the nature of the complaint, the steps of the complaint process, including when the complaint was opened, and to obtain written statements regarding the alleged violation. Again, this is in direct response to finding number one, finding one, number 2E.
And I agree with that. I think that currently with our current board investigator, we have not had too many instances where we've gone beyond that 10 days, but I know that there were some findings with the previous investigator.
This is Board Member Tapscott. I agree with that. I agree with a properly staffed, properly supported board that would be a reasonable expectation. And there's some starkiness in that response, just to point out that it's very challenging for our current board staff to do this, but I agree.
Yeah, I'll just echo that. I agree, and I support it. I think it's a great standard.
Yes. Next.
Okay. Number four, staff shall prioritize all complaints on a first-come, first-served basis unless the alleged violation may pose an immediate physical harm to the health, safety, and welfare of the public, if not immediately addressed. And again, this is in relation to finding one, number 2C.
I concur.
As Vice Chair DeRoost, and I agree. I that looks reasonable to me.
Yeah, this is Board Member Tapscott. I'd like to say that actually the board, at least organically, does that already. So, of course, I agree. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if I may, in working with the director and board staff, I think that actually a lot of the things that the audit wanted to see in policy was already being done. It was just a matter of actually putting it on paper, if that makes sense.
Jessica, I do want to ask, and first of all, I want to ask the board members if they have these listed and up on their personal screens as well as on the shared screen, because there is quite a bit here that we're going to be going over, and I just want to make sure that we have enough time to cover it, because I do need to, I need to be done by 12:55. So perhaps the board members could take a few moments to read these on their own and then ask the questions to you, Jessica, if we have questions or if there's something pertinent that you would like to bring up specifically that needs attention.
I actually appreciate that quite a bit. I have a hard stop myself at 1 p.m., and so I apologize for the difficulties I had in trying to get on with my audio. And cutting that time short. I will tell you that a lot of the comments that I have on this document are really just noticing and tying in the audit findings. And so I don't know that I actually have really any questions beyond what I've already posed to staff.
Okay.
So So I would be happy to defer to the board on how they would like to proceed.
Mr. Tapscott.
I thank you, Chair Ryder, for bringing that up. I agree with all these. These are really well written. There are a lot of stuff they were doing already. It's just putting it in writing. I agree with every last one of them. I am trying to speed this along, but I'm saying that because I 100% do agree with all this. I've read them over, if that helps.
Thank you.
No questions.
Vice Chair DeRoos?
I actually agree. I was able to review everything and I didn't have any major concerns. I will just note the conflict of interest policy. So we had decided not to, it looks like the sunset. Can somebody speak to that a little bit more, Jessica? The conflict of interest policy?
Sure. Give me one second. Just want to make sure that I get there. Okay. So I will say this. Again, I cannot provide you legal advice. I can provide you some policy advice. I can provide some advice when it comes to rulemaking. What the Auditor General stated was that they would like to see your conflict of interest form, including an affirmative, for lack of a better word, checkbox that says that they do not have a conflict of interest. From a rule writing standpoint, from a policy standpoint, the concern that I would raise is that if you are requiring an affirmative checkbox that, you know, as a board member, I do not have a conflict of interest, you're now looking at having every board member fill out a form, excuse me, for every matter, for every meeting that uses that checkbox that says, no, I do not have a conflict of interest. In my experience, I have not seen such an affirmative checkbox on a conflict of interest form. When you're looking at what GERC, for those of you who are not familiar, the Governor's Regulatory Review Council uses for their conflict of interest forms, no such affirmative checkbox has been used. And I think that that creates an unnecessary burden on your board members. I think that it is unnecessary. And from what I can tell from the laws that require board members to declare conflict of interest, it does not seem that an affirmative no is necessary. And so my response, like I said, I drafted the policy for when board members have to declare and how they declare, how they identify whether or not there is a conflict of interest for them, does not include an affirmative response. But like I said, this is a matter for the board to determine, and I cannot give you legal advice. And I'll leave it at that.
Director Overton. And you are muted.
Apologize. I want to remind the board that this issue came up under Seamus Monahan when he was the earlier predecessor to the current team. And he opined the same as what Jessica just offered. And in fact, we have the double safety of the mention on the agenda for every single meeting, in addition to the annual forms signed by all staff members and all board members. So that was the opinion at that time. I'm just offering that for the Assistant Attorney General's benefit, Jean. Now, she may or may not be familiar with that, but without either of these individuals speaking, Seamus Monahan had opined that prior to Jessica's work on this go-around. So
I believe what we have in place and what we have been doing is sufficient, more than efficient.
as we acknowledge that at every meeting. Assistant Attorney General Jean Galvin.
And in case if you want to jump in, but all the boards that I represent do it the same way. They will notify the board in writing if there's a particular matter on that agenda, if there's a conflict, and then annually they file a report that would provide or disclose any pecuniary interest in a matter that may come before the board. This affirmative, no, I don't have a conflict, is unprecedented in my experience.
I agree. I like the term snarky that was used before. It seems a little bit nitpicky, in my opinion. Mr. Tascott.
No snarkiness again, but yeah, I want it on record. I can tell we all do. We take it very seriously when Chair Ryder asks if there's any conflicts of interest. I know that's going on record. I feel like I am making a legal statement even by not saying anything. And yes, absolutely. It's very clear. That we are actually giving an affirmation at the beginning of every meeting of whether there's a conflict of interest or not, even if we're not speaking up.
Correct. Thank you for that. Did that answer your question, Vice Chair?
Yeah, thank you. I saw that and I fully trust that what was on there was true. I just wanted to have some clarification and make sure that we were all in agreement with that. But I do agree with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Jessica, please go ahead.
Thank you. Okay, so I think that we, unless someone else has a question about one of these particular policies that we are, providing for the board, excuse me, there is one more issue that I would like to present to the board.
Yes.
So one of the remarks or audit findings, excuse me, from the general, Auditor General, was that the license should be issued no more than 2 years. And I drafted a policy at the board's request that really addresses this issue. And I just wanted to present it to the board formally, I guess, and open it up for discussion if necessary.
Yes, this particular one has been a thorn in our side for a little while. Board Member Tapscott, please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Ryder. Really quickly, love it. It solves the whole problem. Nice and simple, clear language. We renew every 2 years on a birthday, except on your initial license. That way the way you've written it, we can't go over the 2 years in the beginning. It's great.
And I think it's fair as well. And if they're only getting a year and a half from their initial license, then so be it.
This is Vice Chair DeRoos, and I would agree. It's very clear. Thank you.
So with that, unless there are other questions or comments or suggested edits to anything else that's been presented in this policy document, then I will defer to the board and to Director Augerton, and please let me know if there's anything else I can do for you guys.
Thank you so much, Jessica.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Can I just ask a question? Because I I'm not sure about something, and I went through this once before on this issue. Jessica, so a person comes in for an initial application, and it's given, and it expires on their birthday. But are you saying that they expire on the birthday even if it's less than 2 years? Because what the board has done historically is they've given 2 years and the difference between the issuance date and the birthday. And what the Auditor General found unacceptable was that people were getting an initial license of 2.5 years. Are we now saying that the initial license is under 2 years potentially depending on the birthday? Because this is really important to the individuals that call the phone and send emails. And we had a previous assistant AG that reminded us that this is a property right of the person that gets the license, and it's commerce. And I just want to be really sure about this. And have you tell me, because I've been on the wrong side of this issue. We've been on the wrong side of this issue more than once, and I don't want to repeat that.
Sure. So what you're looking at, when I looked at your statutes and your rules, what happens is you will, according to the very first policy mark, right, which is you will issue licenses within a certain amount of time, regardless of when they apply. So, and that's why I've highlighted this number 4. So if they apply for a license on, you know, let's call it April 25th, and you issue the license May 1st, but their birthday is January 1st, then by statute, what has to happen is that that license must be renewed before the expiration date, which is every other year on that licensee's birthday. So if their birthday is January 1st, it's going to expire if they don't renew it every other year.
So what they may only get a year and a half off of that initial license. Am I hearing that correctly?
I believe you are. I think that by statute, it has no bearing on when the license is issued. Everything per statute seems to be dependent on every other year based on the licensee's birthday. So if they, you know, do their math and they apply on, you know, a certain point in time so that they get a full 2 years out of that license, great. If not, then again, it doesn't matter when that license is issued. It will expire if it's not renewed every other year.
And I think just having this documented and very specific, I think people will be fine with it as long as it's consistent. And that's where we got bit before, was we were told one thing and we changed it, and then we went back and we changed and it changed again, and then there was a lot of different information being thrown at us. And that's where people were getting very frustrated with the board. And so having this in writing and being very specific, also very informative for the schools when they are letting their graduates know what to expect if they may only be getting a year and a half or a year and 9 months from that first license that they get. You know, it is what it is. Mr. Tapscott.
Yeah, I like the clarity of this statement. We are trying to contend with two laws. You have to renew on every other birthday, and we can't renew a license for more than 2 years. So once your license is on your birth date, we're fine. Every 2 years, boom. And so we cannot create the initial license for more than 2 years out. If you happen to renew on your birthday, I mean, if you happen to get licensed on your birthday, great, but it's going to be a little bit less because it can't be more by law. I think it's very, very clear.
Agreed.
And this is Vice Chair DeRuth, and I think no matter my personal belief on how, you know, you should be able to have 2 years or whatever, I that doesn't really matter. I think you're right. This really does follow the statute and the law and making sure that we're in compliance with it. And that's really where we need to be. So whether or not people will be happy about it, it does follow what we've been told that we need to follow.
Sure. And I know that we can't make 100% of the people 100% happy 100% of the time. We just go with it. Executive Director, did that answer your question?
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. Thanks, board members. Thanks, Jessica. I don't know if it's me, but we've had two interpretations on the issue, neither of which was consistent with the other. And I thought, now that we have the language and you guys are going to be reviewing and maybe voting today, now we have at least the official and we can codify it. And Tony's probably having a weird reaction as well.
Go ahead, Tony.
I just want to clarify something that you didn't cover. And that is, they can renew 60 days early. So they do 60 days early. Well, that means their license will be over 2 years. It'll be 2 years plus 60 days. How do you want to handle that?
Well, 60 days is the time frame that we're giving them to, you know, get all of that, all of the paperwork
right.
and for you to process. It doesn't mean that they're going to get any additional time. They're still going to renew on their birthday.
Okay.
Does that sound good with other board members, I think?
Yeah, I sure do. And that is exactly how I would say it, too. That makes sense to everyone.
Board Member Tapscott?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just want to chime in. Yeah, we want them to renew early. I'm renewing on a non-expired license. It still has 2 months before it expires. You're renewing from the expiration date, and that's not violating anything. And I'm seeing our counsel nod too.
Yes, I will reiterate what Tony has said for anybody on the call and anybody who wishes to listen to this at a later date. Use the 60 days. Use that 60 days. Do not wait until a week before your license expires. Use the 60 days.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Anything else, Director?
No, Madam Chair. If the board doesn't have any more questions for Jessica, then you could ask for a summary discussion. It would be extremely helpful to get this voted on today with the anticipation of doing a cover transmittal letter back to the audit team and
mm-hmm.
concluding this objective we've had for some time.
Would it be acceptable for me to create a motion to accept and adopt the complaint policies and procedures?
Yes, Madam Chair, you can make that motion.
I would like to go ahead and do that then. I move to accept and adopt the complaint policy and procedures as presented and prepared by Jessica Ross, Esquire, and permit the executive director to create new operational policies and procedures and report updates to the board at public meetings, and understand that there will be more to review as the policies and procedures evolve. This is to appease and respond to the Arizona Auditor General Sunset Performance Audit. And before I'm going to let that sit there for a second. Jessica, you have your hand up.
Thank you. And I don't mean to interrupt the board's business. I just wanted to, throw it out there that this document encompasses not just the complaint policies and procedures, but also the license issuance general policies and procedures, as well as the conflict of interest. So I don't know if you, per, you know, your AG, if you need to amend how you are, you know, issuing the motion and voting on it. But I just wanted to throw out there, it is more than just the complaint procedures.
Thank you very, very much. There is a motion on the floor.
Well, I guess my question is, before we move forward with it, because I would approve, I think we should include, per Jessica's recommendation, all the other policies that are included in the motion.
Yes, understanding that there will be more to review as the policies and procedures evolve.
Can I get clarification from the Assistant Attorney General that motion approves all of the complaints or all of the policies, the general policies?
I think after the back and forth we've had with Ms. Thomas and the Chair and Madam Vice Chair, I think the record is clear. But if it makes you feel any better, you can call for a new motion.
Does not make me feel better. I just want to make sure that we're covered. This is Vice Chair Ruth, and I second that motion. Thank you.
And can we do a roll call vote, please, Mr. Overton?
Yes, Vice Chair DeRoost.
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott.
Aye.
Chair Ryder.
Aye.
Three ayes, two vacant.
The motion. Yes.
After you announce, I just want to say something really quickly. Go ahead.
The motion passes. Please go ahead, Mr.
Overton. Madam Chair, Jessica, before you hightail it out of here, could you look at number 10 and just tell them that you drafted this and it's kosher and anything else you would want to say? Because it's related to what the board just did.
Sorry.
Basically, to create a policy that the director can maintain the development of policies going proactively forward.
Oh, sure.
Item number 10.
Am I on number 10? 24 hours before the effective date of taking.
Oh, I'm sorry. Agenda item number 10, not number 10 in
oh.
your analysis. I'm sorry. Basically, I can read it to you. This is what you came up with pursuant to ARS 3242.04(c)(7). The board requests that the executive director oversee the development, approval, and implementation of all board policies and procedures.
So what you'll see in the document that I'm presenting, the director shall update and implement policies and procedures for staff to enforce statutes and rules as necessary. The director shall notify the board of any changes to policies and procedures at least annually prior to the end of each calendar year. At least annually, the board shall provide all staff with training regarding public information and policies. This is all under your general policies and procedures, which is why I mentioned that it's not just about complaints. But I think what you're referring to, Director Augerton, is number one right here.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and I did include that in my motion to permit the executive director to create new operational policies and procedures and report updates to the board at public meetings and understand that there will be more to review as the policies and procedures evolve.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. We just had that separately agendized, and I wanted to make sure that it was consistent.
And did you see how I put all that together? All right.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jessica. This is very, very well put together. Appreciate it. Next on the agenda, item number 9, report by the investigator, Senior Investigator David Elson. Could you please provide an update?
Yes, Madam Chair. Since the last board meeting, we've had 16 new cases, 10 of which have been administratively closed by the executive director. We've had 78 new sets of prints and received 60 back. We are currently still waiting on 130 more to go.
Wow.
Still waiting on 130. I did talk to DPS where we mail them to when they go out, and she did tell me she's the supervisor over our applicant fingerprint prints, applicant cards. That there was a problem with the FBI rejecting them, and rather than sending them back to us, and I got a group back today, she said everything we were doing was right, except she would like to see on the label, because each card that we get, we have to put our ORI number, handwritten, another number handwritten, and then we have a label. I make labels on the printer, and I have to attach a label to each one with the board's name and a statute number. Well, now they want it to say licensing next to the statute number. So DPS actually went in there and wrote licensing on every card for us and just resubmitted them to the FBI. So they've gone to the FBI, came back to DPS, DPS went through them and wrote licensing, and then sent them back to the FBI. And I got the first batch back today.
Wow. Okay, that's interesting. Investigator, while I have you, just for a public reference, once again, could you identify the difference between an FD-258 federal background check and a level 1 clearance card? As there are some questions as to why a non-IBP clearance card is processed so much faster than the federal background check itself. Is there an do you have an opportunity to maybe explain a little bit on both of those, please?
Yes, I've talked to DPS and asked them why is it taking 90 days for my fingerprint cards to come back and you're given licenses in 5 to 7, you're given clearance cards in 5 to 7 days. Because what they're initially doing is just running their social security number and seeing if it hits on the Social Security number. And then they issue them the clearance card, and then 90 days later, we get back stacks of people whose clearance cards have been denied after they run the full background check like we have. But ours, what I can't see on the clearance card, so clearance cards, I mean, I think there's a big problem because I've actually had like 3 calls in the last 3 days. We have nothing to do with clearance cards whatsoever, with the fingerprint clearance card. We don't, I mean, we've put it on the website. We've done everything we can to get the word. We don't have anything to do with it. We just need a copy of it to be able to either renew your license or issue your license.
Mm-hmm.
And when DPS tells them it's going to be 7 to 12 days, they call us wanting, they call wanting a, or email wanting a provisional license or something. They have to be told that, you know, you said you can't make 100% of the people happy. We can't make anybody happy, it seems like, the time.
Tony?
Just to touch on what David has talked about, that he doesn't know that people will mail a DPS application and a check to DPS to me and say, can't you just walk it across the street? No. Here's your check back. Here's your money back. Here's the form back with the correct address on the form. I am not that agency. And they're losing their mind. They think we are them. So just thought I'd point that out, that
yes.
I get a lot of payment and DPS requests that have nothing to do with us. So
thank you for adding that.
It slows us way down, too, when they don't put any information on their, like when they mail us an FD-258 card, they're signing that card saying that all the information they filled on there is true. But when they leave blanks, I can't go in there and put that information in there, even if I know it, because they signed it that it's true. I can't attest to what's on that card. I mean, they can't attest to what I put on that card. So then that's slowing us back because it has to go back to them. They have to correctly fill out the card and send it back.
Got it. Is there a possibility to add a photo example of what each of these looks like on the website, like a mock-up, just so that people who are visual learners know the difference between what they look like?
I had a fingerprint, an FD-258 card. Tom and I did and highlighted the areas that need to be completed. I don't know whatever happened to it, though.
Okay. Board staff, I'm going to request that if that is possible to put on our website that we do that as soon as possible so that it gives our constituents another opportunity to learn and follow instructions and that they have a visual to go off of.
And more with the investigator report to go along with the policies and procedures for the Auditor General's peoples. We have migrated everything, all the 2023 cases, to our database now. So all of our 2023 cases are in the database. So they can check those remotely and see when the complaint came in, when this, but, you know, it's a little antiquated system, so it's not the easiest thing to navigate. But I've migrated everything that's 2023 to our database. So complaints are in there.
Okay. Very good. Yes, Casey from the Assistant Attorney General's office.
I just got a quick question about that. Did Mr. Elson, did you say that some complaints were administratively closed?
The executive director closed them. Because they didn't meet statutory authority to actually, they weren't actual complaints, they were applications that came in.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
Thank you.
And anything else from the investigator?
No, that's it, Madam Chair.
Okay. Item number 10, the Executive Director's Report. Executive Director Tom Alberton.
Madam Chair, we've already covered that, and I have nothing in addition, so thank you for that opportunity.
Wonderful. Thank you. Item number 11, discussion, review, and proposals for possible board agenda items for action for future state meetings. I'd like to start this one off. I would like to add a discussion at our next meeting with the board members regarding clarification of, and board staff, pay attention, please. I know you always do. For clarification of ARS 32-4221, licensure persons and activities not required to be licensed, ARS 32-4251, lawful practice, and compare those to ARS 32-925 and 926 with regards to R4-7-1102A. This is comparing the massage therapy board with the ARS chiropractic board and seeing an overlap of who needs to be licensed for what and when. And the reason why this discussion is coming up is because there's a lot of misinformation out there about who should be massaging under a chiropractor. And so I want to bring that up in our next board meeting, please. Other board members, board member Tapscott and Vice Chair DeRoos, do you have anything that you would like to add to your agenda items? Board Member Tapscott.
First, thank you, Chair Ryder. The clarification between massage and chiropractic licensing and such is, it's been a question forever. I would love to have a discussion about increasing the allowed a meeting attendance CEUs, meaning you made a very good point today about getting more people involved. And I'm wondering if there's a benefit, and it's okay if there's not. I want to have a discussion, a benefit to saying, yeah, you can attend 4 meetings a year or whatever. I just think having people on meetings, I mean, I'm kind of pro the idea, but I'd like to talk about it. I'd like to talk about it. I'd like to put it on the agenda.
Yes, let's add that to the agenda.
One more thing. I'd love to put a second item on here because I just want to keep it in the public mind. I want an agenda item that we report out on the understaffing of the board and the lack of board members, because we all know, and you pointed out, Chair Ryder, thank you, that we're going to have a case come across here where one of us has to recuse ourselves and then we're going to lock up. And I want it in public record as often as possible that is something that we need help from the legislature and the governor's office to ensure proper staffing, funding, and board positions be filled. I'd like to put that on the agenda with your permission.
I agree with you. I think the more that we talk about it, that we point our voices in the right direction, be loud.
Thank you. Yes.
Vice Chair DeRoos.
No, I think that your guys' items are great ongoing discussions. I don't have anything to add.
Very good. Director, do you have anything?
No, ma'am. Thank you.
All right. We are just right on time, you guys. So thank you so much. Our next monthly state massage board meeting date is Monday, November 27th. 2023 at 9 a.m. to be held digitally, and that adjourns this meeting.